Well, is there a framework for us to pray prayers like Bruce does? If you're not familiar with the movie, not the movie with the greatest theology, but it does raise some good questions about interacting with God. And we're doing a series on prayer called I Pray, where we talk about different apps, different ways to come to God and to pray. Some of you are really uncomfortable right now, aren't you? See, I hung out with some of my friends a couple weeks ago, some of my friends in the ministry, and they actually made fun of me because they, like all these Acts 29 guys that we partnered, they like to get right down in the middle of the people and like walk up and down the aisle and get right in their face. And one of the guys even said, you know, Hubbard up there standing on the stage in his, you know, high and mighty fortress. And I was like, so I thought I'd give it a try. Youth down here are going, but he's going to spit on me and I don't know what to do with that. We're moving back next week. We'll see how it goes. We're doing this series on prayer, and we've talked about prayers of praise, the fact that in our life we need to incorporate times where we stop and say, God, you're amazing, you're awesome. We bless you because of your holiness and your love, and just calling out to God for who he is. And then, you know, praying prayers of thanksgiving, where we say, God, I see my life, and I realize you're the source of all that's good. And then last week we talked about prayers of confession, that we need to incorporate and create a rhythm in our lives where we're honest with God about the brokenness and the sin in our lives, and that will nurture in us so many beautiful things. And each week we've been looking at a psalm, because the Psalms, the middle book of the Bible, most Bibles, if you take it and just open up to the middle, you'll find the book of Psalms. The book of Psalms is a book of hymns, poems, and prayers that were composed by God's people to be used in worship. It's kind of the ancient hymn book of the Bible, and it was composed, it's placed in the Bible to be used in both corporate and individual worship. And basically, Psalms is a model for us and examples of the vertical conversation. The conversation between me and God, it just models for us how to talk to God, how to communicate with him, how to interact with him. There's a very interesting story in Luke 11. We're going to turn there. I'll challenge you to go look it up. But in Luke 11, the disciples who are hanging out with Jesus raise this question. They say, God, or Jesus, teach us how to pray. Lord, teach us to pray. And instead of Jesus giving them step number one, step number two, he gives them two real brief illustrations. But in these two real brief illustrations, he gives us two relationships that if we can figure out God as these two things and learn how to talk to God on this level, we will figure prayer out. The first relationship is a relationship of a friend. And he kind of tells a story about a person who just incessantly bugs his friend for something that he needs. And what he's saying is, listen, when we come to God, there is a level of relationship. God has chosen to enter into a friendship relationship with you. When is the last time you walked up to a friend and said, oh, thou which art my friend, would you please, you converse with the friend just very casual, very informal, very comfortable. Believe it or not, the Bible says until we kind of get this comfort level with God like a friend. The other relationship that he refers to is the relationship of father. The idea of relating to God as a caring, loving dad who supplies our needs, who loves us more than we could ever know. Some of us grew up with dads like that. Some of you grew up in homes where your fathers did not give you a great reflection of what Father God should look like. But I just want to encourage you that the Bible, all through the Bible, it tells us that when we are the people of God, when we have met Christ, that we relate to God as our Father. When we can come to him, he will greet us with open arms. The image all through the scriptures. In fact, there's several times where the Bible tells us that he has given us the spirit that cries, Abba, Father. That's the basic Aramaic, it's daddy. In the original language, it's Grace and Mary, my two-year-olds. When they see me, their eyes light up, their faces light up. Just this morning, they walked in. Gracie saw me; her eyes lit up, her face lit up. She ran to me, "Daddy!" and put her arms around me, knowing that I will greet her like that. That's prayer. And what we do in the Psalms is we find a framework to grow in the beauty and depth of relationship with God as our Father, God as our friend. Okay, but sometimes we come to issues in life where we feel like God is absent. We feel like God is distant. We hear the words. Some of you in here, yeah, I get God, Father, I get friend, I get it in my head, but my heart right now is not there. And the question is, what do we do with those? And I think for many of us, the framework of what we tend to do is we tend to act really religious, which means I'm just not gonna talk that way to God. I am not gonna talk like Bruce, because if he does, it might get worse, right? Does the Bible give us a place to interact with this? The answer is absolutely. We're going to talk about that. But before we get there, I'm going to get a little help. I'm actually down here. I'm not spending the whole service down here. Those of you are like really still on the edge of your seat, like, oh, you know, anyway. But we are going to do something. We're going to do a couple things that are really different this morning. So if you're a guest, this is not every week, but we're going to do some things that are a little bit different just to help us interact with these big questions. And the first thing is I got a couple of youth who are going to help me pull this whiteboard out. They're going to get out here so we can all see it. And my wife is going to come up here, and she has some dry erase markers. And we're going to do a little bit of an audience participation time. I'm going to ask you to interact with a question. Leon's going to throw it up here on the screens. But basically, I want you to talk to us. I want to get some audience participation responses to the question, what affairs in the world or aspects of your life do you feel are unfair? In other words, when you look at the world around you and you look within it, your own life, what is it in your own life and in the world around where you say, okay, I have this faith in God, but the reality is sometimes the way things really work don't mesh with at least what I have in my brain the way it should be. Okay? And so I'd like you just to raise these issues. Heidi is going to write on the board, and she's got in her mind how she's going to do it in a cute teacher way so everybody can see it up here, which is why I asked her. I want you to just one at a time, and let me respond to you real quick, and then we'll go to the next, some issues. So, somebody, tell me what's the thing where life is unfair. Yes. Natural disasters. Natural disasters. Oh, my gosh. Do you feel the tension of Joplin this week? Have you wept over it? Have you prayed for those people? We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a few minutes. But, you know, when man, especially when they're huge, okay? Somebody else, I saw a hand. Health issues. When people battle long, drawn out, and it just doesn't seem like it should be that way. Good. Yes.
Government corruption.
Okay. When there's evil in the world, the government, people who are in great power, it's like, I mean, it's, oh, smite me, almighty smiter. God, smite them. Why are you not whacking those people? Right? Why are you letting this go on? Good. All right. Somebody else. Yes. Taxes. I'm gonna shake your hand. That's just not fair. Scott Pacino, you're teaching him well, buddy. God, please deliver me from taxes. Yes.
Crime.
A few weeks ago, I went to a Cardinal ball game, came back, and people had broken out my driver door window and had stolen a bunch of stuff out of my car. And you stand at that moment going, okay, God, I'm your kid. Really? You couldn't put like a bubble of protection around my car? Seriously? You know, I mean, you feel that, right? And when you see it happening to other people, yes. When you lose a loved one, when somebody you love, just your heart is just broken and you're like, God, why? How do I make sense of this? And sometimes if you saw them suffer, but the flip side of that is if it happened so suddenly, you didn't even have a chance to say goodbye. Okay? Yes.
Poverty.
You see pictures of Haiti or just go to the city and see people who are broken and hurting. And they have nothing. God, why don't you step in and first of all, get rid of the corruption that's caused some of this and help those people who are so broken, living in such pain because of it. That's good. What else? Yes.
Yeah, just the horrible drinking water, just what they live in. And, you know, I just, at some point in your life, if as a follower of Jesus who lives in suburbia, you got to get in an airplane and go one of those hard places and figure out what it means to, first of all, love people there, but let that shape you. I've never, ever been the same since I went to Haiti. What Haiti has done, among other things, there's a lot of stuff, but one of the things that going to Haiti has done is it has robbed me of the ability to give trite answers. Oh, God's in control. I mean, I believe that. Don't mishear me. But that is just so religious superficiality sometimes. And when you go, okay, I get God is in control, but I look at this and just go, I don't know. All right, anybody else? A couple more? Yes.
I believe
unbelieving family members. God, I've prayed for years for this person to be saved. Why won't you step in their life, break their heart, bring them to you? Because, Lord, I so desperately want them to know you. That's a good one. All right? Yeah, Andy. Yeah. Sometimes you just want to look at God and go, really? I mean, it seems like we feel it in our own lives, the piling on in our own lives, but then we also look at the world around us. We see people who are just already down. It just gets worse, it gets worse, it gets worse. And a lot of times outside of their own control. I'm this week teaching my class, talking about the goodness of God and how, you know, I'm teaching Old Testament history. And a girl who just never really looks up. You can guess. I mean, I don't know any specifics about this. This girl looks up at me and goes, what do you do when you used to believe, but the events of your life have just led you to a point where you can't believe anymore? I got a text this morning, and after we do a little bit more, I'm going to go up on stage, and then I'm going to pray for this guy. It's a buddy of mine named Steve, who pastors an Acts 29 church in Joplin, who asked his brothers in Christ and the churches that they lead to pray for him just about now, because he is going to stand on a stage, and he knows his people need to hear a word from God, and he doesn't know what to say. What do we do with that? Now, here's the deal. The beauty of the Psalms is that it gives us permission to express our honest brokenness and anger and frustration and struggle. And to not put on a religious happy face, but to be real with God. And that is what we're going to deal with this morning. And so, I mean, a lot of times people want to go to church and go, I just want uplifting messages. I got to tell you, they will not satisfy forever. If all you do is put on a happy face and say, oh, we're just going to sing because God is wonderful all the time. And he is, don't mishear me. But sometimes we have to find that wonder out of deep darkness. Anybody else got one you're just dying to get up here? War. Good. War.
God's unfair. He tells us to be Christ-like and holy and blameless, and then we fail him all the time.
Okay. He said that God is unfair because there's this call to be holy and Christ-like and blameless, but the reality in our lives is that we have sin, that we just are constantly failing him, and there's stress in that. I mean, frustration. We feel that. It's a good one. Yeah. And it is unfair. And then what compounds that, you know, talk about the piling on. Sometimes people who live in such blessing begin to believe the hype and begin to think they're blessed because something good about themselves, and they don't see themselves in any way as a way to be a blessing. That's good, Daniel. That's really good. Yeah, Melody. Human trafficking. Now, here's the deal. I mean, it's huge in a world that there are still places where people are conquering other peoples, taking their kids away to be slaves and taking their women away to be hookers. And Automega's angry and frustrated. But then, God, why don't you step in? Now, we go on forever in this. The question is, what do we do? In Psalms of Lament, these prayers, and there's a bunch of them. This week, I want to encourage you to find a blog. I will post a link. I mean, just all the Psalms of Lament. There are all these prayers in the Bible. Leave that there, sweetie. Leave it right there. There are all these prayers that are in the scriptures where God's people cry out from these situations. And they are models for us to follow. And what I want you to do is I want you to watch the screens, because we're just going to show you some phrases. They're going to have to roll fast, so you got to read fast. But some phrases out of the Psalms see if you don't resonate with what the psalmists pray. About one in five, about 30 or somewhere around 30 of the 50 psalms are psalms, prayers that come out of these situations for people, okay? And what I've done this morning is as a model, because the whole idea of this series is to say, when I don't know what to pray, where do I go? And the answer is we go to the psalms. And I would encourage you that the first thing you do is you begin praying the exact words of the psalm. Just when you, like, and if you're a time, this is your life right now, go to Psalm 13, we're gonna look at, and some of these other psalms, and let those, the words of those psalms be your words. Start with that. And then you learn by praying these prayers, you learn to model what the psalmist says, and so then it begins to work out in your life where you don't need the psalm as much as you used to. You just know how to express your heart. And so the idea is that every area of the prayer that we're talking about, to start doing that in your life. Because our goal as a people, the reason we stopped and did this series and took a break from Mark is that we kept hearing in community groups and other places, I don't want to pray, I don't know how to pray. So I'm uncomfortable praying out loud, I'm uncomfortable praying because I really don't know what to say or how to say it. And we wanted to give you all a time where we just challenged you to grow in your prayer life and to get a little bit deeper with your walk with God, but also for those of you who say, I just don't know what to say, that's cool, that's great. Let's take you to the place where you can learn. And so this whole series is kind of a, okay, now what are you gonna go do with it? If the whole thing is okay, cool sermon, I go, and you don't go back to the Psalms to start doing a little bit of the work on your own to grow here, we're missing a point because we need to be people who are deeply seeking God together, okay? So Psalm 13, if you have a Bible, turn to Psalm 13. If you don't, end your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one of those. Read along with us on page 388. What I did is I actually just chose the shortest and most direct of these lament psalms. This one is really concise, six verses. There's three stanzas in the six verses. Each stanza is two verses long, just six verses that express what all the lament psalms pretty much express. But as you saw in that video that we just showed, that there's a lot more of these psalms that will express different issues and different attitudes. This one, we don't really know what's going on. It's a psalm of David, one of the guys in the Old Testament. He's a king who is a very important leader of God's people. We actually did a psalm of David last week and found out he's a crazy, flawed person too, but he'd experienced God's grace in deep ways. But we don't know the situation. But David wrote this, and he's writing out of some kind of situation where it seems like he is surrounded by enemies, and it just doesn't make sense. He's been praying and asking God to deliver him, but he feels like God is far off and distant and isn't hearing him. And so let me just real quick before I read it, define psalms of lament. Lament psalms are prayers that honestly express anger, frustration, disappointment, and the feelings of abandonment to God. All of these prayers are real honest with God, and they, you know, people say, God, I am angry. I am really angry with you. God, I am frustrated. I am disappointed. I feel like you have left me. And like I've already said to you, what these psalms do so well is they give us permission to talk to God as my father, to talk to God as my friend, but to communicate with him in such a way that says, I am going to be real with you. I'm not going to be fake. I'm not going to do the religious thing and just clam up and act like everything's okay. I'm going to bare my soul and I'm going to be real. You've given me permission to do that. And all of these psalms have a rhythm to them. And that's what I want to talk to you about is the rhythm of this psalm, which is the rhythm of all of them, okay? The rhythm of this psalm is the rhythm to all of them. It's just this one's nice, short, and sweet and gets to the point the way it does it. So let's look at this. Let's read Psalm 13. Open your Bibles there, and I'm going to read it, and you read along with me. It says, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? If you're listening to the song, if you haven't figured it out by now, we just heard the song, this psalm sung to us as you watched the screen. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Do you hear that? God, are you going to, I mean, have you just totally forgotten me? Are you going to forget me forever? Will you never remember me? How long, O Lord, will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? The first stanza here, the first two verses, four times he asked the same question. How long? How long? How long? How long? How long? Have you ever felt that way? God, I've been praying. It's been months. It's been years. This situation hasn't left me. I'm oppressed. I'm alone. I don't feel your presence. The people who know I'm your kid are not even laughing at me because they think, hey, you trust in God. It's not happening like you thought it would. How long, oh Lord? Is this going to go on forever? There is a cry of deep distress, deep abandonment, deep loneliness. Then he says, verse 3, consider and answer me, O God, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. It's a phrase that's referring to somebody who is at the end of a time where they're literally death is upon them, and their eyes begin to kind of glaze over because death is imminent. He says, that's what I feel like. And if you don't step in and light up my eyes, I am not going to make it. Lest my enemies say, I've prevailed over him, my foes rejoice because I am shaken. There's a very clear cry that God, if you don't step in and do something, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how I'm going to make it through. That's the second stanza. Third stanza. But I've trusted in your steadfast love, and my heart will rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. It kind of like, well, wait a minute. That's not quite the rest of it. And what I want to do is I want to show you from this psalm and others this rhythm that happens in all of the lament psalms that gives us a framework for this kind of conversation that is real. And God is saying, yes, talk to me. Be willing to jump out of your dots and cry out, oh, smite me, oh, mighty smiter. I don't get it. You're the only one who's... I mean, to be honest with you, if we end up with Bruce's prayer with this last stanza, it's actually not a bad prayer. It's actually not a bad prayer, okay? And so let's figure out this framework and then take this and learn how to pray this way, okay? Let's download this app into our lives so that whether it's ourselves or whether we wake up one morning or hanging out one night and we see a tornado just blitz through Joplin, we know how to pray and how to cry out to God with people, for people, and for ourselves from that. And the rhythm, the first part of this rhythm is that all these psalmists, the first thing they do is they look in. They look in. They're real honest about what's going on in their own heart, their own soul, and their prayers. Sometimes, and we like to sing songs that are uplifting. We like to come in here and sing songs that lift our soul that are all about praise. But sometimes you come into church, and it's like all week has been crazy. The kids have been nuts. You had a fight with somebody at work. Your wife has just not gotten along with you, and you haven't seen eye to eye, and everything's coming unglued in your life, and it just seems like nothing works. And then you walk in here, and we got songs, and you feel like it's like you got to put a screen over and just put this facade on and put a bubble around you and come in and just praise Jesus. I'm going to sing glory, and you know, and we begin to sing, and it's kind of like in the midst of that, on the inside, you're like, I don't feel this. But what happens in a lot of times in Christianity and in church is that we train people to live their lives on that level. And so it's like every week there's this rhythm of putting, you know, you pull in the parking lot and on the way here you argued, you kicked the cat on the way out of the house. You're you know, just frustrated with everything in life, but you know how that when the car goes and park in the church parking lot, your life goes into a totally different mode. And the Bible just, I mean, that's, it's fake, and it's fake to God. Now, that doesn't mean, the Bible does say that out of our distress, we need to worship. So it's good to come in and say, okay, I got to figure out what the song means and sing to a God who is good. But we need to learn that our lives don't need to constantly be in that mode. That honesty with God is a good thing. And what all these psalmists do is they look in first. They are honest about their frustration, their feelings, their anger, their hurts. They express prayers like, how long, O Lord? How long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? Are you going to hide your face? Hiding your face is a biblical way to say that your presence is gone. Is it okay to pray that? And here's what happens with the psalmist and what the psalmist begin to teach us, that there are theologically things that we should know that our heart doesn't feel, and it is okay to pray what our heart feels as long as we don't lose what our head knows. In other words, the Bible's full of promises where God says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. But the psalmist here prays, God, you're hiding your face from me. You've forsaken me. I'm alone. Psalm 22:1 begins with this, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now, if God has promised us that he will never leave us or forsake us, is it okay to pray, my God, why have you forsaken me? Is it okay to pray, God, I don't feel your presence? Is it okay? And the answer unequivocally is yes. How do we know that? Who prayed Psalm 22:1? Jesus. In fact, if you study the Psalms and then study Jesus' quotations, and what's really interesting, most theologians say that when Jesus quotes a verse from the Psalm, it's not just him proof testing a verse. What Jesus is really doing is he is now giving reference to the whole Psalm. And the one verse is representative of everything that is contained in that chorus, that Psalm, that song or prayer. The most often quoted Psalms by Jesus are lament psalms. They're not the psalms that say, oh God, you're wonderful. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, and all that is within me. Bless the soul, and don't forget his benefits. They're just songs, psalms like this that say, my God, why have you forsaken me? Where are you? There's another type of psalm that's called imprecatory psalms. Imprecatory psalms are a psalm of lament that includes this. God, my enemies are surrounding me. Get them. Don't save them. Get them. Is it okay to pray that? Well, if we're quoting a psalm, I guess so. We're not going to throw them out of the Bible. And God is revealing something very deep that my mind can say, God, I know that the best thing I can do is pray for their salvation. But at the same time, right now, my heart is really frustrated with these people around me who are evil, they're wicked, they're against me, but more than that, they're against you. So here's my prayer today, God, whack them. And what happens in the Bible is that the Bible begins to give us this incredible permission not to be disjointed, but to be real as our heart expresses anguish and frustration, but while at the same time seeking deeper truth and holding on to what we know theologically. It's to say, on one level, God, I don't get Joplin, while theologically we know that somehow God is in control and he is at work in every situation. God, I don't get that my life is collapsing. And it's learning to be gut honest with God about these things, and it's okay to do that. It is okay for us in our prayers to get rid of the facades, get rid of the fake things, to get rid of the formal just activity of prayer. Because if all you do is a formal activity of prayer, you'll quit. You'll quit really, really quick if all your prayers are, God, I know you're wonderful, and I'm just here to bless you. God, take care of all the people in the world. Bless them. Help them, you know, have a good life. And feed the, you know, hungry, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just all this heady prayer that doesn't really, you'll quit that. Because you're not, you don't converse with friends that way. You don't converse with your father that way. You're just going through a rote ritual. What you do with friends is when your life is brutal. You say, we need to go have coffee. I need somebody to spill my guts. The Bible is calling us to that with God. And we need to figure out what it looks like to download this in our life, to be honest and start incorporate this in our prayer life. And so the first part of the rhythm of every one of these psalms is that they look in. They are real with who they are on the inside, the hurts, the struggles, the giant questions that while there is a theological answer to them, we also know that just the rote theological answer doesn't solve it for me. And they also wrestle with the tension that God is bigger than they are, so they know that sometimes you won't get answers. The entire book of Job is about that. If you go read the book of Job, huge book that is just depressing. If you read the book of Job thinking you're going to find the answer to the question, why do people suffer? You will get to the end of Job and you will be frustrated because it doesn't answer it. Oh, the end of Job, where the answer to why do people suffer, God's answer is, I'm God, you're not. That's it. And so as we wrestle with these things, these psalms, they do such a good job of saying, it's okay for me to be honest. When is the last time you literally sat down and in a real way said, God, I am really angry at you. I am really hurt. I am really broken. And I feel so alone. I know your word promises that you'll never leave me, but as far as what I feel in my experience, I do not know where you are. Pray that. But the second thing that the psalmists do is they look back. They look back. Every one of these psalms, and Psalm 13 just does it in one phrase. In a lot of the psalms, there are long, drawn-out sections where the psalmist, after expressing his frustration and anger, stops and they look back. And what they look back to is seeing the work of God behind them. The things where God has already shown himself to be good, okay? Here in the text, in the very last, it's actually the very last phrase here, in chapter 13, verse 6, he says, I'll sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. In other words, what the psalmist is doing in this rhythm is he is stopping and saying, I know this situation. I have blinders on in this situation right now, but I know this isn't all there is. And if I stop and I turn around and look back, I realize that in my past life, God has been gracious. Because when we are in these situations, even though the psalmist calls us to be honest, when we are in a situation where life is overwhelming and we can't make sense, we get major blinders on. All we can see is now. All we can feel is our pain. All we can deal with is what's immediate and in the situation, and we are just crying out for relief, for God to step in and do something now. And because of that, we do get blinders on to anything else that God has and will and is doing. And what the psalmists continually do is they say, okay, but here's the deal. In my prayer, I'm going to remember. You've dealt bountifully with me. I will sing to you because I know in the past you have shown yourself to be good and you've dealt bountifully with me. And these, in all the Psalms, they do this in several ways. One way that they do it is they look back on their own history as a people. Not just individually, but they look back at what God has done. A number of these lament Psalms run to the Exodus story. In other words, they will say, God, I can't make sense. Life's bigger than this. I am falling apart. The world doesn't make sense. I don't know what to do with you. But here's what I remember. My people, the Hebrew people, were in slavery. And they were in a worse situation than I was. And from out of that slavery, you raised up Moses. And you stepped in and acted on behalf of your people. And you delivered us from slavery. You did the 10 plagues. You performed mighty acts. You parted the Red Sea. And you did all this to make us your people because you love us, you're in a covenant with us, and you have proved yourself to be good. And so right now, I can't make sense of my life, but I do know you did that. That gives me a point of reference. It gives me a way to kind of deal with this. For us, as followers of Jesus, this means that when we're having the blinders on, one of the things that we always need to do is we need to turn and look to the cross because that is our redemption story. That is the place where the love of God was forever settled for us. I love, there's a book called Experiencing God by a guy named Henry Blackaby, and he tells a story when his teenage daughter, was found to have cancer. And it was one of those 50-50 things. And he began to wrestle deeply with it, and he began to pray prayers like this. And what came up in his heart was, God, do you really love me? If you really love me, I wouldn't be going through this. And he had this vision that he saw in his head of his daughter sitting in a chair, and there was a cross behind her. And he began to see his daughter in light of the cross, where God himself sent his own son to suffer horribly. And from that cross, Jesus cried, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he said, from that point on, the question on whether or not God loved me was settled. I never raised that question again. And see, that's what this does. You look back to our redemptive story, our history, who we are as a people, and it takes us back to Jesus. And at the cross, what happens for us is we look back and we say, God, I can't make sense of this, but Jesus, I know you came and you suffered with me and for me. And because of that, you've already acted. And so we remember our history. The psalmists also look back at people. Sometimes there are stories that right now I can't even find anything in my own life to make sense of. But there's other people who've walked through this. And so like the psalmists in these psalms, as you study them, you look through them, you read them, they will go, but I remember Moses, but I remember David, but I remember, and they'll start calling out the names of these people that are in the biblical story. And they will say, with this person, they walked through something like this and you were good to them. It took a while. They suffered, they struggled, but they found you in the middle of it. I will trust you. This is why it's important for us to not just get trapped in our own little time and place, but to realize that throughout church history, there are people, the history of Christianity is littered with people who walked through the worst of situations and found God in the deepest ways in the midst of them. We need to read The Hiding Place by Corrie ten Boom. As Corrie ten Boom tells how she met the grace and the depth of God in a Nazi concentration camp where her father and her sister were both killed as a result of it. And her testimony is, I met God there. We need to wrestle with stories of people who have sat down and chewed this turf and wrestled with these issues. We need to pick up every once in a while, as followers of Jesus, a biography of somebody who has walked through hardship and suffering and pain. And not feel like nobody else understands, nobody else has ever gone through this. This is why community is so important. I mean, we keep saying, listen, don't live your Christian life in a vacuum by yourself. You have to be in community. You have to have somebody who will come around you and put their arm around and say, listen, it's okay. God will see you through. And then somebody else says, I don't want to be trite with this, but I just want to let you know I've been there. Not exactly like you. It's not that I know you've walked through things that this is a little bit different, but I just want to tell you that I walked through a time of darkness in my life and God was there and I found him. There's beauty in that. And so what the Psalms do is they say, I remember Moses. I remember David. We need to figure out a way in our prayers to go, okay, how do I find these people that help me figure this out so I remember that God has been good to others. He will be good to me. And then they look, you know, the Psalms, they look at their own life and they look back over their own story. They look back over their own history. They remember the day that they were saved. They remember the day that God called them out of darkness into light to follow Jesus. They remember times in the past. And the stories in the Psalms as they say, okay, my life is hurting, but I remember, they will recount. And that's what he says here. Specifically here, he says, I know that this time I will get through it because in the past, I'm going to sing to you because in the past, you've dealt bountifully with me. I will choose to rejoice in my heart because there are stories in my past life where I've seen your goodness. And so the rhythm of these Psalms, all the time they look in, then they look back, but the last thing that they all do is they look up. There is something amazing. Every one of these Psalms ends like this. I don't get it. I don't know what to say. I don't know where to go. I feel alone. I feel angry. I feel abandoned. But I will trust you. I'm in. I'm not bailing. I'm not walking away. I can't make sense of this, but I'm going to run to you. I'm going to stay connected to you. And even if I die, I'm not walking away. Here's the deal. The only way you can say this is if God holds you. You're not going to do that in your own power. But the beauty of all these Psalms is there's this cry. Look at it. Verse 5. I've trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. He says, I have trusted. The word trust is confidence. This idea of a place to hold on to when there's nothing else that makes sense. And then my favorite original word in the whole Bible, steadfast love. It's a Hebrew word, hesed. And the Hebrew word hesed is a reference to God's covenant love on his people, his never-ending, non-stopping, always giving, always seeking, always pursuing, holding on, never letting go, beautiful covenant love that God has chosen to step in the lives of people, call them to himself, he saves them, and then no matter what happens in their life, he will keep pursuing them, he will keep loving them. If they are faithless, he will be faithful. It is his covenant love on those whom have found him, who know him, whom he has chosen, whom he loves. And you got to hear this. If you're a follower of Jesus this morning, God has placed his hesed on you. And you may not feel it, but he's pursuing you and he's loving you. And sometimes it's in the darkness, in the place where I can't feel God at all, that he is the deepest there. And so the psalmist says, I will trust you, I will praise you. And what this is a fixed point of reference. It's a bearing. It's a pilot who is wrestling with darkness, wrestling with being in a major storm. and not trusting his own feelings, but flying by his instruments. There's a story in the first Gulf War of a fighter pilot, dead at night, you can't see anything. He's in an F-15 skirting across the sky on a mission. And there was a surface-to-air missile in Iraq that got lock on him, that got missile lock on him. And, of course, there's a moment of sheer terror as if he doesn't get out of that. So he begins to do his maneuvers where he's spinning and doing all kinds of crazy stuff to get out of that. And he got out of the lock, but then his senses were all out of whack. And what in his brain, up was down. You know, he didn't know where he was, but he felt like he was going up and that he needed to bank down to get out of this climb. That's what his senses told him. And as he's dealing with this in his brain, he looked down at his instruments, and his instruments told him he was going straight down, and he was losing altitude very quick. And at that moment, he had a choice. Do I trust my instruments here? Do I trust my altimeter and the thing that, you know, I don't even know the names of them, but the things that tells me if I'm balanced and level, or, you know, or do I trust what I feel? And he made a decision at that point in time that his instruments are going to be right, that he can be wrong. And so he put his faith and trust in his instruments, and as he comes and recounted the story, he was less than 2,000 feet from hitting a mountain. But he trusted his instruments. This is what the psalmist does. Because what happens in these storms, the stuff that's on this whiteboard, man, we've spun out of it, and up is down, our senses, our emotions, our feelings, what is going on the inside, we feel like, I need to run away from this. God, you aren't there. God. But what the psalmist does is he says, but I'm going to find the instruments. I'm going to locate the love of God, the chesed of God, and I will trust you. I will trust you. And if trusting you means I'm going to fly into the dark, into the storm, right into the middle of it, I will trust my instruments. And that's what the psalmist, this is what these prayers are all about. It's looking in, God, it's hurt, it's painful, it's hard. Looking back, God, but I know you've worked in my life and the lives of other people and the lives of your church in the past, and you've shown your goodness. And God, I trust you. I trust in your love for me, even though I don't feel it. It doesn't feel like you love me. It doesn't feel like when a tornado goes through my town that you love me. But I know that when I read your word, if I am your child, if I am your kid, you have settled your chesed on me. You love me. And that's the instrument. I'm going to hold on to that. I'm not letting go. Learn to pray that. Learn to pray that way. And God will shape your life. Now, in this series, all the way through, what I've done with every sermon, I'm going to do this really quick, is I've tried to give you some just practical ideas on how you can do that. And I'm going to give you several real quick, okay? So this is the practical part. How do you incorporate this in your life? Let me just give you some practical ideas. First of all, don't fear honesty with God. I've already said that. Don't be afraid of sitting down and, you know, smite me, almighty smiter, and you're the only one. It seems like you're the only one who's not doing his job. Don't be afraid to be honest with God. Don't be afraid that if you pray that, he will zap you. Now, the problem with Bruce's prayer is he doesn't have the third part, but God, I trust you. If that making sense. So you got to get to that third part of this prayer, okay? But don't be afraid with honesty of God. Use a journal. Write your prayers. Be a journaler. Now, I confess this to somebody who I don't do great with this, but I will tell you that this is, for a lot of people, a very effective way to walk through darkness and good times and all that, is to start journaling. But here's what happens if you journal. When you journal, it also gives you something to go back to the next time you go through the darkness, okay? You see, oh, I see how God brought me out of this. And so if you begin to write your prayers and your thoughts and your interaction with God in a journal, it'll be helpful. A third thing is pray the lament psalms when you're hurting. Find these psalms, pray, literally pray them when you don't know what to pray. Another thing is find someone who's chewed the same dirt and pray with them. Pray with someone who's chewed the same dirt. If you're going through a time where it's whatever the situation is, figure out somebody in your community of faith, in your church, or the world around who follows Jesus, who's been through something like you, and say, listen, I don't need counsel. I need prayer. I know you've walked through this. Will you pray with me over this? Go have coffee. Go have lunch a couple times over, you know, over a month or two. Just make an appointment, a weekly appointment with somebody who's been through this, and pray with them. Another thing is pray over your photo albums. Grab your photo albums. What are photo albums? They're great pictures of how God has shown his goodness. Look at your kids when they were young. Look at the events of your life where there was just joy. and use that as a way to say, okay, God, I get it. You've been good. All right? And then another thing is read biographies of faithful Christians. I've already referenced that. Use that when you're really in a dark time. Go find somebody who their stories, they've walked through deep darkness. Read the story of Joni Erickson Tada, who when she was a teenager jumps off a cliff, thinking she's diving into a deep place in the sea, hits the bottom with her head, severs her spinal cord, and read how her story is, I thank God for being a quadriplegic. Figure that out. Read Corrie Ten Boom, some of these other great stories, okay? And so our goal is to be honest with God. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to do something a little bit different this morning. We're going to have a prayer time. And the prayer time is going to focus on this whiteboard. We're going to ask you to find a group here. I'll give you instructions in just a second how to do this. But we're going to ask you to find a group of 5, 8, 10 people and to gather in a group and pray for these folks. While we're praying, will you pray for Steve Enge? And his preaching this morning for Mystery Church in Joplin. Will you pray for the folks? But we want you to find folks in Joplin. We'll pray for the folks who've been devastated by the floods. But as you do this, we just want you to find a group. We've got some people who are here gonna help lead. And so we don't want to be awkward. If you're like, oh my gosh, he's gonna make me get in a group and gonna make me pray. We're not gonna make you. If you're uncomfortable praying out loud in a group, that's cool. Don't worry about it, okay? Just enjoy the moment. Let other people pray out loud. If you are comfortable, we'd love for you to chime in and be part of that. But we've got some people who are ready for this, and so I'm gonna ask those people to stand, and they're gonna raise their hands there. And what we want you to do is we want you to find one of these people and gather around them just for a few minutes, just a few minutes of praying over the things that are broken in the world, the hardships. If you're not near one of them and you're like, hey, I don't mind praying out loud, you can get with another group that's not there. But find a group. You can do that right now. Find a group. Let's spend about 4 or 5 minutes just praying over these issues. And then we're going to sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. Okay, go ahead and find a group.